Okay, so welcome in to our hybrid live and Zoom shiur. We are up to our fourth shiur in the halachas of Bishul Akum. The first three shiurim we focused on the opening seifim, which were focused on the question of which sort of foods are vulnerable to Bishul Akum. We spoke about the two major conditions that the Gemara has on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. We got involved in some of the details of Iker and Tafel, and questions that when you have chunks, they remain Aser. And we left hanging a question which we'll return to later on, a few questions that we turn to into the Simen. One question was determining exactly what constitutes Nechal Kmo Shuchai, how edible is edible. And another open question that we'll return to at the end of the siman is a question of flavor. If you're cooking something that becomes Bishul Akum, does it give treifa flavor to other things? Like if it shares its flavor with other foods or with kelim, does that make treif? We have the principle of tam ke'ikar by Bishul Akum the way we have by most areas of kashrus, or is Bishul Akum somewhat more kal? So we reference that a little bit in Sif Gibel. We return to those two hanging points, Mirat Hashem, and the Shulchan Aruch circles back to these issues at the end of the Sinai. But now we turn our attention from the question of what's our foods to the question of what is called an act of Bishul. And we're going to have a series of conditions that the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch raise. In terms of even if we're dealing with a vulnerable food, the Nachri is preparing fish, the Nachri is preparing eggs, the Nachri is preparing meat, let's say. He's grilling eggplant, so it sounds like it's susceptible to Bishul Akum, but what does a Nachri have to do? What constitutes an act of Bishul Akum? So the first issue the Shulchan Aruch takes up, we're going to skip Sif Dalis for now, we're going to jump straight into Sif Hey. Take a look at the Gemara Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. Either you have your actual packet, or you have an actual Gemara Avodah Zarah, or you have the PDF that was attached in Google Classroom. Take a look here in Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, where we left off. Amar Baron, right after Kimcha Iker, like I'm 15 lines down. Amar Baron, Amar Rab, Akum Shehitzes Es Ha'ur. Let's skip down. Let's get to the gist of things. This very end of the narrow lines. Gufa. Amar Chanan Bar Ami, Amar Padas, or Amar Abba Bachana, or Yechanan. Hi Akum, the beginning of the wide lines. Hi Akum, the Charech Resha. You have a Nachri. Who had a chicken? The chicken is very nishkat kiroi. The chicken is kosher, but it's raw, and he scorched the head. He scorched the head. Why is he scorching the head? He scorched the head of a chicken. The answer is because you're trying to remove the feathers. But when you scorch it to remove the feathers, so you may end up actually it's not a lot of heat. But you may end up removing some. You're trying to remove the feathers, but you may end up roasting some of the softer parts. Amar Yechon, Hay Akum Decharuch Reisha Shari Lamechel Minei Afil Mereish Une. You're even allowed to eat from the tips of the ears. The tips of the ears are very soft and very thin, and they already got roasted from the Nachri's initial scorching. Now that he scorched it, the Nachri scorched in the factory. Let's say scorched it to remove all the feathers. And then later on it gets sold to an end user, to the consumer, and the consumer takes home the raw chicken that's been conveniently defeathered already, and the consumer makes, a Jewish consumer prepares the chicken, cooks, bakes, roasts, whatever, at home. So Rav Yechon tells us that's not a Bishul Akum problem, even though the ears were already done, and most of the chicken is raw. The ears of the chicken are not, the ears of the chicken are... or the ears of the animal, if it's a mammal and you're removing the hair, or whatever it is, the ears are already roasted, but that's fine. Why is that fine? It's not nechal chai, potentially olos shalchum lachem. It was done by the Nachri. The Gemara explained earlier That's the question of kavana. It's lavure seir kamacham, because your kavana, Nachir's kavana, was not to roast the chicken. Nachir's kavana was just to remove the hair from the animal, to remove the feathers from the bird. And the Gemara goes on, Ravina, so Rabbi Yochanan is the very beginning of the Amoraim. Yeah, he's the first generation. He's a young Talmud of Yehuda Anasi. Ravina is at the very end of the Tzkufas Amoraim. Amar Ravina, on the end of the first word line, Hilkach. Based on that, Hay Akum Deshad Desichta La'atuna. Let's say you have a Nachri who put a wooden peg into an oven. Recover by Yisrael Kira Meikara. A Jew had a squash, had a pumpkin, and he had already put it in the oven so that when we turn the oven, it'll bake. It's going to need a lot of baking time. So he's stuck in the back of the oven. The next time we turn the oven, the pumpkin will sit and bake until it's finally sweet and soft and ready. Nachri walks over to the oven, doesn't even realize that the pumpkin is there, and he turns on the oven to dry out his harden his pegs. The Ravina says, "What should it be? Shapur done? It's totally fine.
Squash is not eaten raw.
We're talking about type of correct. We're talking about type of squash that's not eaten raw. Good point. Right. So let's say we're talking about zucchini. Zucchini is mostly eaten, cooked or grilled, but sometimes raw. That's what we're talking about. Let's say an eggplant. Eggplant. No one eats eggplants raw. They're very bitter, and they're not. They're not tasty unless they're grilled. So the Jew left the eggplant in the back of the oven. It's hard to see. Non-Jew comes by, turns on the oven, ends up, the fire is on for a couple of hours, and by the time we're done, the eggplant is delicious. So Ravina said, not a problem. Why? It's Ne'u Nechachai, it's Olo Shulchan Malachim. The bishul was totally done by a non-Jew. So Gemara says, no, it's fine. Why is it fine? Why is it pashut? Because he didn't have kavana, so he wasn't trying to bake anything. Versus pita, it seems pretty obvious. Versus ma'ale tem levashule mana kamachavin kamash balon lesharure mana kamachavin. The Gemara says, I would have thought it's usur, because I could have said, look, he didn't intend to do bishul. He didn't intend to do bishul on my food. He intended to do bishul on his item. He wanted to be mevashul the tent peg, and he. So maybe I should say, look, when you lit the fire, it was with kavanah special. Kamash malon. Now, here once again, as we saw earlier on the Amud, the Gemara does us a favor of explaining what the kamash malon is, which you don't usually get. Gemara says the kamash malon is not, oh, he didn't have my food, my item in mind. The kamash malon is, that's not called bishul. To take wooden pegs and process them in fire so that they get hard, that's not considered an act of bishul. That's l'sharure mana kamachavin. So let's play it out. There are a couple things going on here. Number one, if the Nachri had put in his own food into the oven and turned it on, then it would be a problem. Even though he doesn't intend to mevashel, he doesn't need kavana to mevashel my food. He has to have kavana to mevashel some food or another, which is interesting. It's the non-obvious, because you could have said there's not much of a concern of chasnas if he doesn't intend to cook my food. So that you see from the Gemara. The Gemara didn't leave that up to us to try to figure out. The Gemara was explicit. The kamash malan is that this isn't called bishul, which brings to the second point, which you can file away when you learn Hilchos Shabbos, but something we've touched on. How do you define bishul? What is the definition of malach of bishul? So the Rambam writes in Perek Tes of Hilchos Shabbos, beginning of Perek Tes of Hilchos Shabbos, where he takes up the malach of bishul. He begins in Perek Zayin, he lists all the malachas, and then Perek Ches, he begins the next number of prakim to go through one by one all the malachas in order. So he goes to the first 10 in Perek Ches, and Perek Tes begins with halachas of bishul. And he writes there, over the course of several halachos, there are three different definitions of bishul. So the Rambam looks at bishul. There's bishul on food, there's bishul on water, or maybe beverages in general, and there's bishul on non-food items. So bishul on food, the Rambam says, it takes something inedible and make it edible through heat. That's something we touched on in terms of the nechal chai. For the Rambam, it could be that if it's edible raw, perhaps it's just not called bishul, because it already is edible. So to mevashal of food is to take inedible food and make it edible. To mevashal water is always drinkable, even when it's cold. And the Gemara is clear, Mishnayos and Gemara are clear that there is bishul on water. Rambam says that must have a separate definition. The definition of bishul on water is not making it edible, but heating it. And finally, there's bishul on non-food items. So most Rishonim say that bishul on non-food items is to soften something. Gemara talks in the seventh paragraph of Masechta Shabbos about heating tar. I think Bobby Rishami talks about heating wax. As you're melting things, you're changing phase with heat. That's considered to be a violation of Melechas Bishul. Now the Rambam expands it. The Rambam says that Bishul on non-food items, Bishul type 3, is to take something hard and make it soft, or to take something soft and make it hard. Now the problem is this Gemara. Because the Gemara here told us explicitly that to make the peg, I would have thought that you put the peg in the oven, that's bishul, kamasha, no, you're hardening it. So it sounds as though the Gemara is saying that to harden something is not bishul. That's a discussion. When you learn Hilchos Shabbos, learn Hilchos Bishul, you can dig into that some more, but this is an important source. Okay, so now let's see how this plays out in Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, question?
Why should it matter that what the svara that just because the guy didn't put his own food in, that's not considered bishul anymore? If that's what we were saying, I'm not sure.
No, halacha. Let's take a look at Shulchan. Let's see how everything lands. Seifei is according to the language of the Rambam. Akum shebishav l'naskav l'bishul. If a nachri cooked food but didn't intend to cook, didn't intend for any bishul, so mutter, that's fine. Ketzer, he gives an example earlier in the Gemara. We skipped our part of the Gemara. The Gemara gives this example earlier. Akum shehitzis or ba'agam kelahavir hechatzir. If they sounds like they blowtorched a pond in order to maybe destroy the algae, to destroy the vegetation. Maybe they're getting ready to drain it. So they scorched a pond. The pond had bugs in it. Bugs aren't kosher unless they're chagavim. So Gemara gives a case that the Rambam here quote, Rambam Shulchan here quote, Nisbashu chagavim, there were kosher grasshoppers, live kosher grasshoppers in the pond. And when the Nachri blowtorched the pond to scorch it, to remove the vegetation, he ends up, you know, and you drain it, you find at the bottom these toasted grasshoppers, which for some are a delicacy. Hare elu mutarim. They're mutar afilu makam sha'on shulchan lachem. Even a place where it's olal shulchan lachem. Certainly, from looking around the wrinkled noses, most people seem to think that they're not fit for human consumption at all. Even if they're fit for human consumption, they're usually, I think in cultures in which grasshoppers are eaten, they're usually a snack. So they're not olal shulchan lachem lapis is apostle par paris. But the Rambam says, but even in a context, usually grasshoppers are not a bishul lachem problem anyways. But even in a place where they are, and by the way, this is one of the mekoros that it depends. The definition of olal shulchan lachem can vary from place to place. We saw a makor can vary from time to time. Because they vary from place to place. But still, even if you're not going to get off the hook because it's not olal shulchan lachem, it's still mutter. Why? Because the nachri didn't intend to roast grasshoppers. He was just trying to burn. Let's just finish the sif. I'll have to take a question. V'cheinim charach harosh lahavir haseya. Or if you scorch the head of an animal to remove the hair, you scorch the head of a bird to remove the feathers. Mutter lechel rashi haznaim shenitzlu b'shas hacharicha. I'm allowed to eat the animal later, even the ear tips, which were, because they're so thin and soft, were already roasted by that scorching, because the Nachri had no intent to do bishul. Aval, and here's the point there, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam, in terms of the end of making explicit the implication of the Gemara. Avim kivin l'shem bishul, but if he did mean, the Nachri did intend to do a bishul. Kigon shehisik ha'tanu l'vashava. He fired up the oven to cook in it. I had already left a piece of meat in there beforehand. I already left an eggplant in there beforehand. And Nachri may not have known that my food was there. He turned on the fire to bake his apple pie. I already left their meat earlier, which he was unaware of. Venitzla, and it gets roasted. He didn't know. He didn't intend for this piece of meat. He didn't even know it was there. That is aser. That is aser. Yeah, question. No?
No, I think I got it.
Question?
So why the chiluk?
Why the chiluk? That's interesting. It's hard to say. I'm not sure. This I wondered about. Why it is. Chazal insisted that Bishul Akum only applies if the Nachri has Kavanas Bishul. He doesn't have to have Kavanas, Kavanas and Vashel, my food. He has
so
to have Kavanas Bishul.
I mean, like, if we want to say that even when he doesn't realize my food, it should be even if he's trying to harden his word. And it should be, even, and if it should be, if we want a form of Kavana, it should be Kavana that my food is also getting Mevashel, no? And I feel like it's an interesting way, weird place to draw a line.
Yeah, so there is some discussion, I think Machlok is riff and Rashi, so I think some suggest maybe it's driven by, if he, no, yeah, let's leave actually riff and Rashi alone. I'm not sure. The Gemara is clear about it, and the Gemara doesn't even leave it up to our imagination. Right? That was the Gemara clarified the Kamashmalan. If the Gemara had just said Kamashmalan and not said Lishurei Mana, I think many of us would have guessed. I would have guessed, oh, Kamashmalan, he intended to cook his food, but he didn't intend to cook my food, but that's not enough. The Gemara did not leave that up to our imagination. Why is a good question? It could be, this is entirely speculative, it could be that it may be dangerous to say he has to have kavana to cook my food because everybody can sometimes be very iffy in terms of how you know what he had in mind. Did he know it's my food? Maybe he didn't know it's my food, which again, that did he know it's my food is an issue that Riff and Rashi debate a little bit. It could be that's easier to draw a clean line at he has to have kavana for bishul. The halachic definition is a bishul. Did he intend to do some sort of bishul? Okay, but once we get involved in which item was he trying to mevashel, that may get a little messy, and it may not be a sturdy hagdara. Yeah.
So question. Even if it was a non-food item that he was doing, and if it was a regular food item.
Correct. If he meant to melt wax, which the Halpi Din is considered to be cooking, he turned on the fire to melt wax, to melt make candles, let's say, and I had food in there, that would be a bishul akum problem. Right? He has kavana, or he lit the fire to heat up his kettle of water. And I had a piece of meat there, something like that. Anyone want to unmute for a question online? No. Okay. So let's just talk halacha l'maisa. Before we go on to the next sif, let's talk about this halacha l'maisa. Ephraim, is that you? Why are we equating Bishul of Shabbos? To Bishul Akum, because that's how halacha usually works. But in general, here we're applying even to Drabanan, but that's something we discussed in Shir earlier in the year. That the principle of Mamotzinu, of Binyinav Mikasav Echad, is that we assume that halachic categories and halachic constructs are meant to be shared as much as possible, unless there's an indication otherwise. So let's say if we have a definition of the term lechem, I think we spoke about that earlier here, if we have a definition of the term lechem in one place, we might learn from this is Minyan Adiyoma. So we learn from Hilchas Chametz u'Matzah that lechem is only the five grains because matzah has to be something that could have become chametz. So it's only those five grains that could become chametz. And then we assume that that's not something specific to matzah. That's a general definition. When the Torah says lechem oni, that's what lechem means. So it's going to be true by lechem oni of matzah. It's going to be true by Eretz Asher Lo Miskinos Tocha Lechem for Birkas HaMazon. It's going to be true by Hefrashas Chal. It's going to be true, and it's going to be true also for the Din Drabanan of Pas Akum. It's only one of the five grains. Rice bread might be Bishul Akum, but it's not going to be Pas Akum. So the same is true for Bishul as well. That's how halacha works. Unless otherwise indicated, if there's a construct of Bishul, so we're going to, our starting assumption is that Bishul means the same thing by Shabbos and by Karban Pesach and by Basar B'Challav and by Bishul Akum and so forth. Sometimes there may be indications otherwise. There may be, let's say, a Shabbos consideration that only is in play, the Melachas Machsheves, the Melachas Rich Lagufa is only going to be a Shabbos issue. In terms of the core definition of what Bishul is, our starting assumption is that it's shared across the board. Halacha is generally global. The default is that halacha is global. And just in terms of Hapsak Halacha, practical issues, we don't have necessarily, I don't know how many of you have ovens that you share with tent peg makers. But this can come up in two very practical ways. One is a little old-fashioned, the other one is not at all. One is a little old-fashioned. My grandmother, one of my grandmothers used to sometimes, when the house was cold, she would turn on the oven for warmth. Now, it's not really a very smart idea. It's usually assumed to not be very safe. But let's say the Nachri turned on the oven for warmth. So that's an example of, he lit the fire, shelo l'shem bishul. Or let's say, here's a very Hamish variety of that is, could be you, no one here would ever do this, but maybe you have friends who know people who have friends who know people who are in a dormitory and they want to heat up some food, so they'll stick it on the radiator. If you're in a dormitory, it still has a radiator. Now, the Nachri may have turned on their radiator in the basement, Pishlakim. Then number one, okay, but I put the food on. Let's say I put the food while the radiator was cold, and then they turn the radiator on. It's still not a problem, because he didn't turn the radiator on Kavan to cook anything. He was trying to provide, presumably trying to provide warmth to the house. Let's say he's trying to cook the water. Got to think about that. So in a case where he turned on a furnace for it to provide heat, that's not a problem of bishalakum, even if I end up cooking food. Or here's something that's more up to date. And that is, let's say the electricity went down. Let's say there was a blackout, which might happen to some of us today. Hopefully not. So let's say you had food in the toaster oven. And you put food in the toaster oven. After a minute, there's a blackout. Right? And then, 20 minutes later, power goes back on. It's a gewalt. Al pi rov, the people working for PSE&G are probably non-Jews. They just turned on the fire for you. The food is already there. If I put the fire on, the food's already, the fire's already there, I put the fire on the food. So that's my bishul. But I left the food there and nothing was happening. 20 minutes later, the Nachri turns on the electricity. Either I have an electrician in the basement who's fixing electricity for my house, or the workers are handling this whole block or this whole zone. They turn the electricity, or let's not get involved in Shabbos issues, but let's talk about, it's a Friday afternoon, you put up the chalent, a half hour ago, the chalent's raw. And you lose power. 20 minutes later, the power goes back on. That's the Nachri's cooking. So it is a Nachri's cooking, but we're safe. We're safe because of this din that he had no kavanah as bishul. His kavanah is turning electricity primarily, the vast majority of what electricity being used for is not bishul. It's lighting, it's heating, it's all sorts of other things, all sorts of equipment they're being powered by electricity. It's not about the bishul. So that case, those cases where he turned on the oven for heat, or even more likely where he turns the fixes the electrical grid. So that is not a bishul akum problem because of this sif. Okay, now let's turn our attention to the major discussion in terms of the ma'aseh bishul is in terms of how much does a Jew have to do. Now this first din sort of is a boutique din of kavana, that if he happens to be, he did the entire ma'aseh bishul but didn't have kavanah bishul, so then I get a scot-free. Okay, let's talk about classical. That doesn't come that often, right? Okay. Power outage. Hopefully those don't come that often. But let's talk about things that happen all the time. I have a Nachri in a Jewish kitchen and he's cooking. So what do I have to do in order to make that food kosher? That's going to come up all the time if you're giving in an industrial setting or even in a restaurant setting. You're giving hashgach in a restaurant. So if they hire Jewish chefs, okay, no problem, bishlakam. But they hire non-Jewish chefs. So how do we make sure? So one thing we have to do is make sure that the ingredients are kosher. But another thing we have to do is, even if the ingredients are kosher, there are Jews around the kitchen, we're not worried about the ingredients, but Lamaisa, we have this expert chef, he's doing all the cooking. I'm in the kitchen, but he's doing the cooking. So how do I, if he's doing the cooking, so B'pashtus, I mentioned in Sif Aleph, there is a day in Tosis that we do not accept here in Al-Khathila. There is a day in Tosis that says as long as it's in a Jewish home, there's no bishlakum. We do not accept that. Certainly al-chatchila. Maybe if the poskim discussion, we accept it b'dieved. Let's say someone messed up and they accidentally had bishlakum. It was in a Jewish kitchen. So is that a sniflakum? But certainly we would not allow that. Even that's not so pashut. Certainly al-chatchila, it's not allowed. So the question is, 1 second. So what do I have to do? How involved do I have to be in order to be able to characterize this as a sort of a joint cooking. It's no longer bishul akum, it was my bishul, or it was our joint bishul, so therefore it's mutter. So that's a very, very fascinating sugya. We start on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. What I want to do, there's some difficult Ramas, and I think it's going to work much more smoothly. If this was Ian Shir of Odazara, we'd probably read the whole Gemara straight, and then be bothered by lots of kashas when we get the Rama, and then try to work everything out. So because this is a halacha shir, let's instead do this in process fashion. Meaning, I wanna build the teretz into the way we learn the Gemara. So we're gonna learn pieces first. Take a look at the fourth wide line, Lamed Chesam Alaf, the fourth wide line. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Heniach Yisrael Basar Gabi Yechalim, Uva Akum Vahafach Bo Mutter. A Jew puts a piece of meat on the coals. Sounds good. Right? So you're grilling. So a Jew is grilling, puts a raw steak on the coals, walks away, and the non-Jew comes by and turns it. Hafach bo.
The meat or the coals?
That's an excellent question. That is an excellent, excellent, excellent question. Sounds like the meat. Right? Bo often sounds like the meat. So that's mutter. Even though I did an act of cooking and then he got involved, that's still fine. Why? Presumably it's a joint act of cooking. Let's see, let's skip the later Amaram have a back and forth a heichidami about this, but for now let's skip down to the third line from the bottom. We have a brisa, the Gemara, after the Gemara has a shock of the tire about Shmuel, the Gemara says we have a brisa that supports Shmuel. A Jew can put a piece of meat on the coals, and the Nachri can arrive and turn it. The Jew's going to go to Shul to daven. Jew's going to go to Beis Medrash to learn. Yes, Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. That's right, Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. The Jew's going to go to the Beis Medrash to learn, and he'll come back. And the Nachri is turning the meat while he's gone. So again, assuming that there's some sort of hashgacha, so you know that the meat didn't disappear, and it's the same kosher piece of meat you left there, there's no bishul akum problem. Even though he's been turning and turning and turning, that's fine. The Gemara gives another example. Bryce first gave a male example, then gives a female example. Shofeses isha kedera al gabe kira. A Jewish woman could put a pot to cook on top of the stovetop. And then you can have a non-Jewish woman who's stirring the pot while the Jewish woman heads either to the bathhouse or to shul. Interesting. The assumption is, well, women were not going to Beis Medrash. Apparently, it was common for women to go to shul, b'tkufas hatanan, which is an interesting historical tidbit. So that's a braisa that supports, like Gemara said, as what Shmuel taught in Bavel was already a braisa from the Amoron. Let's see a little bit of the Gemara on the continuation on Lamed Ches Amud Beis. The second, picking up where he left off, Ibayelu. The Gemara says, okay, that's interesting, Din. So that if Yisrael starts and the Nachri continues, that's mutter. Ibayelu, what's the obvious question? Heniach, and again, Ibai is a shiloh, it's not a kasha, now we want to just expand our knowledge. Heniach akum v'hafach Yisrael, now how about if you reverse the roles? So if the Jew started, then the non-Jew continues. Okay, so that's mutter. Now how about if it's reversed? The non-Jew put it down, and then the Jew wants to continue. And let's make this very practical. You walk into your kitchen, and you see that the non-Jewish person in your kitchen decide to make your scrambled eggs. Surprise you for your birthday. Cool. Domestic help. Right? Beautiful. Very nice. The intent is wonderful. The problem is that you're watching Bishul Akum, you know, forming before your eyes. So the question is, well, it's not done yet. So it was Hiniyach Nachri, Vehipech Yisrael. How about if I go and stir? I'll take the spatula, I'll flip the eggs. Is that okay? Does that solve the problem? Right? Or let's talk about that in the restaurant. You mean the Jew has to put the food down first, and then only afterwards a non-Jew can stir? How about the reverse? the chef gets it started. At some point, I'll come by and, stir the food. Is that good enough? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, kal v'chomer. Nachman Yitzchak said, Avada. 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 Of course. Gomer b'yad akum muter, Gomer Yisrael l'kalshkein. Nachman Yitzchak said, that's even better. The first case is a bigger chiddush, because who finished it? The non-Jew. In the first case, non-Jew finished it. He's the one who gave it final form. He's the one who makes it delicious. And still it's mutter. So kalshkein, if all the non-Jews put it on, and the Jew's the one who took it to the finish line, it should definitely be mutter. And then the Gemara goes on to say, it's my nami. Let's just finish this line of the Gemara, and then I'd love to take your question. It's my nami, Rabbi Baruchana, Rabbi Yechanan. Either the more famous Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Bar Chana, or it sounds like his brother, Rabbi Acha Bar Chana. Either one of them was called Rabbi Yochanan. Ben Sheniach Akum Hafach Yisrael, Ben Sheniach Yisrael Hafach Akum Muter. Eino Aser Ashet Chilaso VeGamro BiYad Nachri. It's fine unless the Nachri does everything. So whether the Jew does the beginning or the Jew does the end, either way, that's kosher question.
But why is it a koshkin? Why can't I see from the other side that it's all about the starting of the process of official?
Yeah, so that's a good point. That's what the Gemara is introducing here in Amud Beis, is an assumption. There's a svara, there's an underlying svara that we care more about the end. We care about the completion of it. So, the good question. So, offhand, you would say it's probably driven by an olal shulchan malachim idea. Right? In other words, who made it a finished product? Who made it something worthwhile, something significant? Whoever took it to the finish line. Now, and it is interesting. This is part of maybe what's underlying the sugya. Is from a bishul, if you're looking like we were talking before, looking from a global perspective, the concept of bishul, I would have said, the greatest, the most significant mevashel is the one who put on the fire to begin with. Everyone else is doing what we call karuve bishul. You're enhancing the bishul process. You're accelerating the bishul process. But it's already cooking. Okay? We're talking about a case where it did not come off the fire. A case where it came off the fire, went back on, we'll talk about later. That's a more complicated case. We're talking about a case that was on the fire, there was one session. Was on the fire uninterruptedly with both Jewish and non-Jewish participation over the course of that session on the fire, the course of those 20 minutes, the course of those 3 hours, whatever it may be. You're right. So with the Gemara, the Svar the Gemara is introducing here is that we care more about the end. We're driven more by the Gemara. So even Jewish participation at the beginning is already enough to matir kolshkin, avada, Jewish participation at the end, that's even a more powerful matter. Let's see the way the Shulchan Aruch takes this. Let's see the way the Shulchan Aruch takes this. Se'if Vav. Let's take a look at Se'if Vav. Kol she'bishul Yisrael ma'at bishulo. If a Jew did part of the bishul, bein b'tchila, bein b'sof, mutter. Whether he did cooking involved at the beginning, involved at the end, Mutter, right, that's clearly calling the memory of Rabbi Yochanan. Lefika chimhiniach akum basar o kedera al gabi ha'esh. V'hafich yisrael v'basar v'egiz b'kedera. If a non-Jew put meat on the fire or put a pot on the fire, and then the Jew comes by and turns the meat or stirs the pot, or the reverse case, Hegis Yisrael or Hiniach Yisrael v'gamar ha'akum harei ze mutter. Okay. Harei ze mutter. I want to skip that line in Ramah for now. It's a difficult line in Ramah. Maybe we'll come back to it. But for now, the next issue the Gemara picks up on is a one of the great, this was in our Purim share, one of the great issues in terms of, one of the great halachic differentiators between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, the world of Kashrus, revolves around the very next Gemara and the very next Se'if. So far we just we had two aspects of the definition of the act of bishalakam. Number one, it has to be done with intent for bishal. And number two, it has to be without Jewish participation. If it's a mix of Jewish and non-Jewish participation, assuming it's a single act of bishal, so that's mutter. Right? Whether it's the Jew at the beginning or Jew at the end, doesn't matter. It's only if it's purely bishal nachri and with kavanas bishal. Yeah.
So, tchila and so far, lav dafka, could even be in the middle, just anywhere in the...
Presumably, yeah, okay. Yeah. And now Ravina wants to know about the following. I'm a Ravina. Here we are, where we left off on Lamed Ches Amid Beis, 11 lines from the top, at the start. I'm a Ravina. Hilchasa. How do we pass on Lachal Maisa? Or on the side of the Tel Navy, it's Hilkach. Therefore, Ha Rifta Deshagar Akum. If you have bread for which the non-Jew is Shoger, what does that mean to be Shoger? It means to light the fire. The non-Jew lit the fire. The Afa Yisrael and the Jew baked the bread. Inami, or Shagar Yisrael, the Afa Akum. How about if the Jew lit the fire and the non-Jew bakes the bread? Inami, or option number three, Shagar Akum the Afa Akum. The non-Jew lit the fire and he baked the bread. I mean, baked the bread means to put the bread in the oven where it will left its own devices bake. The non-Jew did everything. What did the Jew do? He came by and stoked the fire. He poked around the coals to make it hotter, or we would say he turned up the dial from 300 to 325. Shapir dami, that is fine. Because, after all, the Jew was involved. Whether he's involved at the beginning, involved at the end, as you said, involved in the middle, it's all good. It's all good, but what Ravina just added is an element that Ziv was pointing out before that hasn't come up yet. And that is, we're not talking about, you know, if you watch a pizza baker, they typically move the pizza around. There's some cheshbon of hotter ovens and colder ovens. I don't know how it works exactly. If you watch a pizza baker at work, they don't just put the pizza in and take out X number of minutes later. They're doing stuff with it in the middle. That's not what Ravina is talking about. He's saying it's enough for the Jew just to light the fire, or even to just raise the fire. Wow. Well, up until now, we were always talking about the Jewish involvement with the food itself. But here we're talking about Tikkun Ha'esh. So what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? So the truth is, this is a machloke as far as Ashkenazim. So that's as far as we show and assume that the reason why the Gemara before was talking about, you know, stirring the food or turning the meat is because by bishalakam you have to actually get involved with the food itself. Lighting the fire for sardim is only enough for pasakam, not for bishalakam. And I say they draw that distinction. Why did they draw that distinction? So I'll give you one answer. There's more than one, but I'll give you one answer. If you take a look in Shulchan Aruch, 30 seconds left. Okay.
We have to when it ends, we have to all just come back to the
link and
start a new one.
Okay. So let's do that right now.
Well,
yeah, Ziva just... Okay, now we're all back online. Ziva was just asking a question. How does this cover? How could it be that if the Jew is involved in the middle, that's also good enough? But you see from Ravina, involvement in the middle is fine. Because the point of the Kal V'chomer was that I could have imagined that the only meaningful engagement by the Jew is Gemara. I could have imagined that, yes, the Gemara used to paraphrase, the Gemara talks about Ein Mitzvah Nikra Se'el Al Shem Gomro. You could have imagined that Ein HaMachal Nikra El Al Shem Gomro. Whoever finishes off, that labels the food. The one who brought it to Olah Shulchalachim status, the one who brought it to the finish line, I could imagine that's the only person with whom we identify this food. There's no such thing as multiple labels. I could have imagined that. And if all I would have had is Amud Bey, that's what I would have said. Whoever finishes the food, that's how the food is labeled. I don't care what happened before. I care about the last step that actually made it servable. But you see from Amud Aleph, that for the Jew to begin it is also fine. So what you see is that a food could have more than one label. It's not either done by him or done by him. It can be done by them. And as long as there are multiple participants, as long as there's Jewish participation, that's enough. It doesn't have to be Jewish completion. It could be that Jew did something, the non-Jew did something. So then already, it could be that Jew did something in the beginning or the Jew did something in the middle. That is it's a slight chiddush, but we do see that from Ravina. But then again, coming back before, and thank you for Doe for helping us transition with our technical issues, coming back to where we left off before, what Ravina is adding is the major issue Ravina is adding is that tikkun, it doesn't have to be tikkun ha-machal, it could also be tikkun ha-esh. It could just poke around the fire. And bear in mind, this is of incredibly vast practical significance. Because if, imagine you're doing this in a restaurant. If you want the Jew to participate in the tikkun ha-ochel, that means he needs to get involved in every single pot individually. If you want the Jew to be involved in tikkun ha-esh, that's sufficient. The Jew could light the fire at the beginning of the workday, and the fire stays on for the entire next number of 5, 8, 10 hours. Or think about it in a canning plant, in an industrial setting. And if it suffices to have tikkun ha'esh, that means that the Jewish mashkiach lights the boiler that boils the water that becomes superheated steam that cooks all the cans. And that now it can go, the boiler could go for hours and hours, maybe for days and days, with that one action by the mashkiach. Mashkiach will have to be in and out to make sure the ingredients are kosher, but as long as that fire stays lit, there's no bishlachim problem. If on the other hand, you're going to demand, like the Sfardim do, that for bishul, for food, you need the Jew to participate with the food itself, that's going to be a whole lot more complicated. So that is a Sephardi approach. Again, to say that, look, Ravina only mentioned tikkun ha'esh by pas, but when it comes to bishul, you need tikkun ha'machol. And why should we differentiate? So this is where we left off. Why should we differentiate? Take a look in the Taz of Katan Zion. The Taz is on the inside, the Rashi position. I'm using a different edition of Shulchan Aruch, but the one you have in front of you, this is on page 230 near the bottom. Near the bottom left quadrant. Sifkat and Zayin. Elo bepas. The Taz quotes the Ran. Ran kasuv. Hatam. You know, actually, let's back up. Let's see the Shulchan Aruch first. Shulchan Aruch quotes the Sephardi position. Ein shigir sifkat and sif Zayin. Sif Zayin Shulchan Aruch. We'll take a peek at the Taz. Ein shigiras hatanur mo eles elo bepas. Lighting the fire only solves your problem if you're dealing with pas akum. And that's something that was already discussed in the previous simon in Shulchan Aruch. Simon Kuf Yud Beis is a simon about pas akum. Avol b'shar mizbashlim, if you're dealing with bishul, ein shegiras hatanur velo hadlakas eish ma'ale umarid. Light firing up the oven or lighting the fire in the stovetop, it does not do a thing. This is the Shulchan Aruch presenting this position of the Chachmei Sfarad. Ela ha'anocha davka. You have to actually place the food. You have to be doing something with the food itself. For instance, place it on the fire. Lefikach, therefore, says Shulchan Aruch, Harosu levashel b'machavas, b'tanam shal nachri, if I want to put my pan of food into a non-Jewish oven, tzarech sheyiten ha-Yisrael machavas, v'socha tanur, v'makam haroi lezbashel bo. You better make sure that you put the pan of food deep enough into the oven that it can cook there. The fact that I may have poked the fire is not going to help. I need to actually do something for the Shulchan Aruch, for the Sephardim. You do something with the food. So I need to actually place the food in a location where it could cook. That is deep enough into the oven. You might know, back in the old days, in the Alter Heim, the challant was, they did challant in ovens. They often do challant in baker's ovens. Everyone come to the bakery on Shabbos morning to pick up their challah and carry it home. That's why you need an erev in town, because otherwise, how are you going to have challah? It's not a joke. You wouldn't otherwise have hot food for Shabbos day, because that was the way it was practical to keep a fire going. You had one central fire going. So that might be a Jewish baker, or it might be a non-Jewish baker. If it's a non-Jewish baker, so Shulchan Aruch says, don't think that he's going to rearrange the pots, but you'll, you know, stoke the fire. Stoking the fire does not help for Bishul according to Svar. You better make sure you're actually doing something to the food itself. Now again, why is this the case? And let's take a question. Why is this the case? Why the distinction between Pas and Bishul? So the Ran gives a Svar. Here's Sifkat and Zayin and the Taz. Baram el bepas, baram kasav hatam. The Ram gives a reason. Shashgiras hatanar bepas malacham yuchedas bo. Because when it comes to baking bread, lighting the fire is actually a significant act. What does that mean? So a couple of different ways to understand that. What he may mean is as simple, the Taz goes in a different direction, but the simple reading of the Ran whom the Taz was kind enough to quote on the page, is, I don't know how many of you are active in the kitchen, but hopefully if you're not active in the kitchen, you know people who are. If you are active in the kitchen, so you know that one of the big differences between baking and cooking is?
An oven or a pan.
Right, it's number one stovetop versus in the oven. And more than that, even though you do sometimes cook, you can cook on the stovetop. You could also cook, you could bake chicken in the oven. But when you're baking bread.
You're not very involved in while it's cooking.
Right. Usually you put it there, you leave it there, and the temperature matters a lot. The big difference between baking at 325, baking at 375. In a way that cooking food is usually, doesn't matter that much. Certainly on a stovetop. Leave it a little longer, a little shorter. A little hotter, a little cooler, it usually doesn't matter that much. The food chemistry of baking is such, especially baking bread or baking cookies, the temperature really matters. That's the simplest reading, I think, of what the Ran means. That to light the fire, that's actually a melachah miyuchedes. When it comes to bread, that's actually an important bit of the work. And I don't know how they did it. Before they had gas ovens with dials, it must have required a real melachah miyuchedes to. Bakers probably had to have a certain intuition or experience to know how hot the fire is. And if you need to adjust it, how are you going to adjust it? Adding wood, taking away, poking around the coals. But setting the temperature is a more significant act. So the lighting the fire or even modifying the fire is a more significant act when it comes to bread than when it comes to cooked foods. That's the approach of the Chachmei Sfarad. While the Ashkenazim disagree, going back to Ziv's point, when the Tur quotes a Gemara of Hipech, the Jew from Lam Ches Lam Aleph, the Jew put the one party puts the meat on, the other one is Mahapech, so the Tur quotes as Mahapech Bigechol. Not that you're turning the meat, you're turning the coals. He thinks that's what's going on with Alf. Also, the truth is, take a look at Rashi.
Who is it, the
Torah? Yeah, the Torah. The Rashi talks about Hesek to Akum. It sounds as though he's understanding either a different girsa or just understands that Hipech is the same as Hesek. Again, Hesek means lying in the fire. That's the Ashkenazi position. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, you look in the Ramah, where we're up to in Sif Zayin, he says, here's a gloss from the Ramah, a note from the Ramah of Yesh Holkin. There are those who disagree. The Ashkenazim disagree. Take a question in a second. Mishriya Lahu, Dad Lakas Eish, O Chiti Begachalim, Mahaila Inyan Bishol Kamol, Inyan Pas. The Ashkenazim hold that to light the fire, or even just to raise the fire, to be mechata b'chom, to poke the coals, that works for bishul, the same works for pas, v'chein noagim. And that is our practice. Okay. Now it goes on to give to expand this in two more ways, but let's stop here. Let's read the end of the Ramah, and then let's take. Benny's been waiting very patiently for a question. Ramah writes two more details here to add to this kula. Not only are Ashkenazim makel that poking around the fire is good enough, but here are two additional pieces. I feel chitu below kavana mahani moil. Rama holds, Shach disagrees. The Rama holds that you don't even have to poke around with intent, with halachic intent. Because you don't have to be doing it because I know that through doing this, I'm making it not bishalach. And then he says, and here's a very famous kula. Even if the Jew didn't stoke the fire, he didn't even throw in a little bit of extra wood. That's already an additional kula. The hashlachas kisim is good enough to throw some more wood in. Rak shehaakum hitlik ha'esh me'esh shel Yisrael. The Jew lit a fire, and then the non-Jew took that fire and lit the oven. Took that fire and lit the stove. Let's say the Jew lit old-fashioned ovens that had a pilot light that was always lit in the back of the oven, and then when you turn on the oven, that pilot light would light everything else. If the non-Jew lit the first fire, that's what we call Eish Me'esh. There's an additional kulus. These are additional kulus. And these are kulus that are a little bit surprising because I'm not doing bishul at all. What type of bishul? Before, you don't tell me, look, I'm poking the fire while the food is cooking. Okay. So I'm definitely cooking. I'm involved in the cooking process. Or I lit the fire, then the non-Jew comes and puts the food down the fire. Okay, so participate in the cooking process. But to say, mamish, I threw a little stick, I threw one little matchstick into a blazing fire, that's my cooking. I did nothing. And you say that I lit one fire, and then non-Jew came, I lit a candle, and then non-Jew takes the candle and lights all the ovens and stoves. Eish meish. That's my bishul. Shaychus. It's not my bishul. I did something, but I didn't participate in the bishul. That is very, very difficult. That is very, very difficult. The truth is that to make a long story short, the Nosei Kalim here are not happy with Rama. The Shach and the Taz both attacked Rama.
With the both of the last two things Rama said.
Yeah, but particularly with the Eish Me'esh. This idea of Eish Me'esh, Hashlachas Kisim, we throw one little stick, one little matchstick. How can you say I'm participating in the Bishul? Eish Me'esh, I lit the candle, and then the non-Jew used the candle to light the oven. He said, my Bishul. And as well, there's the line of Rama in the previous sif which we had skipped. Afilu end of sivav. Afilu lohay mizbashab lo siyua ha'akum. The Rama holds that if I put my food in the oven, but it wouldn't have cooked without the non-Jew turning it. It would have just remained. Well, if I put a slab of meat on, and it would half of it would have remained raw forever if he wouldn't have turned it. Rama says, that's fine. I did something. So the shach, there's a long shach sivkan ches, and there's a long taz sivkan tes. They say, what's going on? Excuse me, it's a long shach and sivkan ches, a long taz sivkan vav. They say, what's against the gemara that we skipped? We skipped the gemara lam ches on olive. The gemara there said, oh, you better make sure that the Jew is actually contributing to the cooking. If it wouldn't have cooked without the non-Jew getting involved, and that he did all the cooking. I put it in the oven, it was so far from the fire, never would have cooked. And the non-Jew moves it closer. And Rama says, I mean, he didn't do the bishul was all done by the non-Jew. So the Rama seems very difficult. The answer appears to be as follows. This is a significant yisod. This is something that's going to recur again and again. Is that I think Rama is not the only one who ignores the Shach Vatari, which we skipped. The Rambam also does. If you open up a Rambam, when he discusses halachas of Bishalakam, he totally, again, if you want to dig in more, says this is halachas here. If you want to dig in, I certainly suggest you do this. go through the Gemara that we skipped, and then open up a Rambam. And you'll see the Rambam totally omits the Shakti Vatari, which we skipped on the bottom of Lamed Chesam Alf. Why? I think what's going on is this is a classic example of the Rambam's approach of Machlok Zasugis. Because, and this goes back to where we started. Remember, so at that time of days, the Gemara Svara was, oh, Gemara B'yad, it's all about the Gemara. Right? Which is the opposite of the way the Gemara was thinking in the Shakti Vatari we skipped on Aleph. It has to do with the actual definitions of Bishul. And I think the Rambam already saw that as a machlokas, and he passed like Amud Beis, and left out Amud Aleph, the machlokas Amaram, and he's passing like the Amaram and Amud Beis against Amaram on Amud Aleph. And therefore, since he's only quoting that which is the Lachul Maisa, he leaves out the whole Amud Aleph discussion entirely. What does that mean? What that means is the fundamental machlokas Amaram over the following point is Bishul Akam driven, and this specifically, this question of Jewish participation driven by global definitions of what's called Bishul, or no? It just has to do with Hecker. We don't care so much about the definition of Bishul, it's just that we need a Hecker. We need to have a Hecker that will demonstrate that, you know, to remind you, after all, going back to the reason, not the how the Takana is organized, but the rationale for Takana, again, is chasnas. We want to make sure there are speed bumps. It's not smooth and easy and effortless to eat together with non-Jews. And those speed bumps will remind me I can be friendly, but I shouldn't be friends. This can't be my social center. So the Rambam appears to have adopted that approach. The Ramah seems to be taking it and running with it. That it's really about Hecker. Even if the Jewish participation cannot be called Bishul, as long as he's doing something that serves as a Hecker, that's good enough. And that's why, number one, the end of Sivav, the Ramah said, if the Jew put the food in the oven, but if it wouldn't have cooked if the non-Jew wouldn't have moved it in. The Jew puts a slab of meat on the coals, but half of the meat would never have gotten done. Half of the meat would have remained raw had the non-Jew not turned it. That's fine. I didn't do the bishul of that piece of meat was totally the non-Jew. It doesn't matter. It's still a hecker. That also explains what's going on over here. Ramaz is kula. Ashlochas kissim. Ramaz is cool of Eish my Eish. Wow, I threw it. There's a blazing fire. And I take a matchstick and I throw it in. All of a sudden, that's my bishul. It's insignificant from a baking perspective. Insignificant. Or Eish my Eish. I lit the candle and then the non-Jew takes the candle and lights the oven. That's not my bishul at all. The answer is it doesn't matter. The answer is Ramaz would say, you're right. From a bishul perspective, you're talking Hilchos Shabbos or Basil B'chalav or something else. Yeah. It's not my bishul, not my active bishul. But Ramaz have the opinion, and that's the opinion that's the svara that's driving the late Rishonim that he's quoting, the Yisrael Hetu and Trumas Hadeshin, who have these kulos of kissim and eish me'eish, is that even though it's non-Jews bishul, but I did a hecker, that's good enough. So that is that there are more. There are l'chora more rayas, and this is also, I should mention, this question, this global question, something we're going to see recurring again and again over the course of Bishul Akam. Can we be makel if the tam doesn't apply? As I have a hecker, so now it's not, it is Bishul Akam. I lit the candle. He used the candle to light the fire. The bishul was done by him. Christopher did the entire bishul. It is literally bishul akum. However, it's bishul akum where there's not so much of a concern chassus because I made a hecker. I'm always willing to make it. So that question of whether, in this case, the concern chassus doesn't apply all of a sudden, it's mutter, that's going to be recurring again and again over the course of Simon Kufir Gimel. You have been waiting, betting very patiently for a question.
I think it was...
Answered?
Covered? Yeah.
Covered. Okay. Good. So let's recap halacha lemaisa. Let's recap halacha lemaisa what we have here. Last time, the last three shiurim, we were focused on which foods are vulnerable to bishul akum. And today we covered much of the discussion about what sort of act of bishul qualifies as bishul akum. We touched number one on the question of kavana. It can only be called bishul akum if there was kavanas bishul. Not kaneset kavan to cook this food. It has to be kavanas bishul. If a non-Jew fixed the electrical grid and as a result my chalent is now bubbling again, as a result the food, the fish in the toaster oven, let's say, is now grilling. He had no kavanas bishul, so that's mutter. Or let's say a classical case, the second issue. See from vav and zayin. There is bishul, there is kavanas bishul, but there's Jewish participation. So he said, number one, everyone agrees that Jewish participation can happen in the beginning or end. And we were saying, suggesting that whether beginning or end is more mastaber, is that's part of the shift from Amun Aleph to Amun Beis, whether the focus on the act of bishul or focuses on the concern of chasnas. Halacha lamaisa, whether the Jew participates beginning, middle, or end, as long as it remains on the fire the whole time, that is mutter. And for Ashkenazim, participation can either be with the food itself or can be stoking the fire, raising the fire while the food is cooking, or even participating in the fire beforehand. By lighting the fire before the non-Jew even puts the food down, or even, and Rambam had taken, even kissim, even eshmeish. I lit the fire that was used to light the oven. I threw one little stick into the fire, that is all sufficient lefi the Rama. Then again, because although it's nachri is bishul, but since I have a heker, that is mutter. Any more questions? Indeed. Okay. Chaver, thank you so much. Mishem, next time, let's just in terms of where we're headed next time with this, the remainder of the Maisa Bishul conversation is going to focus on, let's say, the food comes on and off the fire. If the non-Jew did part of the cooking, takes it off the fire, I'm going to put it back on. Halacha l'maisa. Halacha l'maisa. You walk into the kitchen and you see that the Nachri has already started cooking some food. Oftentimes, the people's first reaction would be, quickly turn off the fire. That's the worst thing you could do because you just ended the Nachri's Bishul. What you want to do is let the fire keep going and jump in and do something. Either turn the fire up if you're Ashkenazi, or whether you're Ashkenazi or Sephardi, stick a spoon into the food and stir. If you get involved while it's, because our discussion today was a single session of Bishul. We'll talk about it next time, the multiple sessions of Bishul, how that works. Chever Shkoyach. If there's yeshiva tomorrow, we will hopefully continue the Pesachim Sugya and have an opportunity as well to hear Rabbi Berman's first shir klali, which is very exciting, in the Glock Base Medrash at 11 o'clock. We will start the morning with our Onion, and then we will transition to Rabbi Berman. We'll see what the weather brings, and we'll take it as it comes.